It is Saturday, September 13th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
Oh, hey, welcome to Geek Speak. We're bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. I'm Bonnie Jean Primshin, the host chair today, and with me in the studio is Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Miles. How are you?
I'm doing well.
All right. We also have Lyle Troxell, a software engineer, father, and radio.
Good morning.
Radio what?
I was going to say host, but you're hosting.
You are a radio
host. Radio geek?
Radio bacon lover?
I was trying to get the bacon out of the title. So what happened? The last three shows, we had bacon in my title. And so I saw that Bonnie was about to read my intro, and it said bacon. So I started editing it. That's why I didn't bring your mic up in time. I'm an idiot. So radio...
It's live radio, you guys.
Loser?
A bacon-loving idiot.
All right. Well, anyway, you're all here. That's the main thing.
We are.
And we're here to talk about the stuff
of the
week.
No news this week on Geeks.
Nothing exciting happened. No new products came out from any exciting big companies.
Oh, there was that.
Apple. Apple released. Is the iPhone 6 anything, you guys?
So,
here's the reason. Here's why I know okay, iPhone 6 is coming out, because all the people who need a phone are waiting for the iPhone 5s to get real cheap so they can actually afford a phone.
Yes. So the iPhone 5s did get $100 cheaper from Apple recently. But the real trick is to find someone that has an iPhone 5, has tons of money, is going to buy an iPhone 6, and you nab the iPhone
Yoink.
5 off of them.
So why except are people getting iPhone 6s?
Yeah,
why
except for the whole fact of like the iPhone 6s breaking the previous record that was broken by the iPhone 5s, which was breaking the previous record.
More people buying, purchasing.
Really, people are snatching up these 6s?
Yeah, big time.
They must be the bee's knees.
Yeah, well, they're bigger.
What's so bee's kneesy about them?
So the iPhone.
That's the funny thing about it. Like, we had this discussion at work at you know, among friends online, and it's a really I have mixed feelings about it, because I really liked the when I went from the 4 to the 5, I'm like, yeah, more screen space
vertical,
so I can scroll, and that's fine. I didn't really have a problem with
it. Felt like a big improvement.
The wideness, yeah. And the 6, I haven't held one in my hand yet, so I can't really comment on it.
Right.
However, the 6 Plus, I've held cell phones that were like that.
All right, so there's two new iPhones from Apple.
There's a 6 and a 6 Plus?
There's a 6 and the 6 Plus, and they are different sizes. The 6 is larger than iPhone 5, and the 6 is even larger than that.
The Plus is a plus size.
Yeah, it's a plus size.
Oh, I get it.
And they are more pricey as you go. The 6 Plus is more pricey. So, yeah, I agree, Miles, that the screen size on the iPhone 5 is pretty good. The thing that's nice about it also is it fits in your pocket pretty easily. It's a small phone. I switched from an iPhone 4 to a Nexus 5, which is a larger, it's comparable to the iPhone 6. And I used it for a while. I liked it. I didn't miss the screen size when I switched back to the iPhone 5. Like, the screen size wasn't a big influence on what I'm doing.
Well, how big is it? Because I've heard this phrase.
I wish I had one of these printouts for you.
Is it a phablet or a phone?
Well, if you want to, for the 6 Plus, I can tell you that it's larger than a Pop-Tart.
Okay, that's the size I can get my head around.
I don't see. I'm such a hippie. I don't know what size of a Pop-Tart is. I guess it's an iPhone Plus.
Yeah, but you kind of know what an iPhone 6 Plus looks like, so you don't need that help.
I do. So. We actually printed out and cut them out and played with them, and then I've been using the simulator all week trying to get it to work.
So the 6 is larger, and so I'd love to play with a cutout to see how it'll... Or just go to the Apple Store. Just
Dear
hold one.
Apple.
But
do they have an Apple Store now? You can go visit them?
They always had one in the past where you had one for demo. You just couldn't buy it then.
So the thing that's going on that's interesting is that there's actually a lot more pixels on these things. There's actually more real estate on it. You'd imagine it's bigger.
Yeah.
The iPhone 6 Plus actually has a really dense screen. It's a 401 dots per inch.
So it's not just bigger, but the pixels are smaller.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because of that, the sizing of these things are different, which means that an app that would run on iPhone 4 or iPhone 5 has to be scaled up to fit the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus. So for app developers, we're talking about millions of apps out there.
Everyone's scrambling.
You got to scramble, modify.
I was actually thinking all the web developers that had worked for responsive design doing for Android, Apple now gets to piggyback on top of that.
Yes. In fact, all of the suggestions from Apple in development is to do responsive type design, where you actually, you decide your layout, I'm not going to have this button this big, I'm going to have this button take up this much space from the percentage of the window. So it's this different way of thinking about design.
And that's what they're doing over at Android?
Yeah, but they've been doing it for a while because there's so many Android devices out there. You never know what size you're going to be on.
With Apple, you're always able to say, it's this width, this height, and we're done.
And, the iPhone 5 came out, so now you've got this many pixels more vertically. So you just kind of check to see if it's that, and you do two different things.
Which for web developers wasn't a big deal because we always did it by width.
Right.
Like, the media query was always done by width. Say, like, how wide is your screen? Okay,
but
that's
now
going
are
to
web
be...
developers just kind of crossing their arms and shaking their heads affectionately at Apple, like, you
no,
guys.
No. I think that developers are used to this kind of thing. It's something you do. It's it can be hard if you've built an app.
We're used to trotting a log in the mud.
Yeah. It's just the job of programmers to do this kind of thing.
He's impressing me.
I think that... it's kind of an exciting thing to look at. I mean, I think that if you're a computer engineer, you're spending a lot of time figuring out the solution to a problem, and that's why you do what you do, because you like to do those things.
Yeah, okay,
well,
that makes sense.
No, you like to solve problems, but then there are the types of problems like this one where you're like, there's got to be a better way. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's
the
trick.
That never ends.
Like, for example, with CS, I'm just going to do another pet peeve out there, a little geek one. If you're doing CSS.
Cascading style sheets.
Yes. The way you do visual layout, basically, on a web page.
Or tables, right? You use tables.
Yeah. So with CSS, there's still no way to do a media query that works on all devices to say, this is a touchscreen.
Yeah. There's no media query for touchscreen, is there?
Gee, you think there would be by now. There's quite a few touchscreens out there, you guys.
Right. I mean, that would be the way to do it, to say, like, okay, this is a touchscreen, and this is how big it's going to be, and this is a touchscreen, and this is how big it's going
to
be.
So what you do instead, Bonnie, is you use JavaScript to actually set some kind of flag for yourself, and then you do the styles based off of that, which makes it harder.
Yeah. You have to do extra little tap dance.
Or for that matter, what would be even more wonderful is, here's how big your screen is physically. Like, you can't do that on the desktop, and I understand that, and you can get around that. That's very easy. But on mobile devices, it's a real pain because you'll have something that is, you know, that says it's 350 pixels wide and 800 pixels tall or something.
And it's not, Bonnie. It's lying to you. It's not really that at all. Why, Miles?
Well, you have pixel doubling, but that's something that's for retina screens or whatever. That's fine. Oh, okay. But you have no idea whether that is the resolution on a 3-inch device or on a 5-inch device, or an 8-inch device.
So if I give you a really small phone, and I say it's 1024 pixels wide or something, and then I give you a massive, like, television screen, I say it's the same amount of pixels. That means the button, if I just did it by that, it means the button would be scaled, you know, really, really small or giant, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's what Miles is talking about. You don't really know what size the actual physical thing is that you're dealing with.
So that makes it difficult to visually design what it is in your app.
These are the challenges that Miles and I deal with.
And so you just kind of, like, fudge the numbers, and you just kind of, like, well, this works.
And then you grab
enough.
Six or seven devices, you're like, meh, it's okay.
Right. Yeah, it's getting out. Or you have extensive user agent strings, and you do that thing that people have said don't do, which is read the user agent and work off of that.
So you're describing the last week of my work, right? All I'm doing right now is going, I'm running the simulator for iPhone 6, and I'm putting an app in it, and I'm playing and playing and playing. Now, the thing that's kind of cool that Apple did with this, and that's what I wanted to bring back, is that actually app developers don't have to do diddly squat, because the iOS, the operating system, is going to scale your existing app up. It's going to just fill the pixels. It makes it a little bit bigger.
It auto-scales.
It's a little fuzzy if you're using images, but it's auto-scaling up.
Except that you have a physically larger screen.
Yeah, it looks more clowny.
Did you say it looks more clowny?
Yeah. If I design something for you and it's supposed to elegantly fit in your hand, and now it fits in this thing you can barely hold in your hand, the iPhone 6 Plus, which
is like those giant playing cards.
Yeah, right. It's like a giant playing card. And it's like, oh, this is fun. So everything's like a little more enjoyable.
Large print.
Right. Facebook app has just like a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that the major players that have money to invest in this will actually build out scalable apps, but nothing has to happen right away.
The point of having a larger screen like the iPhone 6 has with smaller pixels so you can fit more information per screen is so that you're not just scaling things up so they look like print for old people.
Right. If you design the app for the device, the idea is to get a lot more content in the device, have more space. The resolution of these things is beautiful. I mean, the difference between the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 5, before the Retina screen on the iPhone to when the Retina screen happened, it's really quite, when you get used to it, you start kind of loving that Retina effect.
And this is what someone told me Retina means, that there are more pixels on there than your Retina can even really pick up.
Well, that's why Apple uses the term retina screen, to say this is as dense as it needs to be for your eye not to know. Okay. And so it's about your eye. But it's a marketing
And it's
line.
Also saying, like, if the phone is held at a certain distance yes. from you, and if you just kind of hand wave a little bit, this because different people have different...
Right. This is one of the...
Then what? Finish the sentence.
Then it's considered
you cannot
retina,
tell the
then
difference.
Then it's a retina screen. Then it's okay. yeah. as good as your retina.
You can't tell there's pixels okay. at all. That's the idea.
Okay.
So the new iPhone... Plus, iPhone 6 Plus actually has a higher density than we've seen on any iOS devices. And theoretically, it's large enough where you'd actually carry it farther away from your face, I guess. That's why they want that extra pixels. But the real thing has to do with the ratio.
Closer in.
To get a 1080p image, which is natively a 1080p image, with...
1080p being 1,080 pixels.
High.
High.
Yeah, yeah. Progressive. Yeah. The P means progressive, means that it doesn't scan interlace, doesn't scan every other line, it scans all of them in one pass. It's a lot of data flow.
Okay.
So,
shall we get geeky?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, now let's get geeky. Yes.
When you have that I versus P, the interlaced is back from the days of cathode ray tubes.
Yes.
Where, you know how... folks remember back with the older TVs, like you
the big
the
heavy
TV
ones
off
your
and
back.
You see a ghost of that image as it fades out. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they would paint every other line on the screen and take into account the fact that it was going to fade out slowly. So you're drawing every
you're
other
refreshing,
line.
Refreshing.
So you'd end up with what looked like a continuous tone or a continuous image, except that you only had to draw half the lines, which means you could update the screen faster. The slower horsepower of computers.
And are you saying that there was a time when we went from CRT, cathode ray tubes, to the current screens where we did that even though it was based on technology that was no longer relevant?
Yeah, we started doing it a while ago based on old technology, just kind of consuming the old standard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And
But it was also cheaper and it was easier to do.
Sure.
And because LCD screens for a while did have that ghosting problem, they did take a while to come back to whatever else they were at. So it actually ended up being a win for early adopters.
Yes. And of course, the reason why we had to do that as well is that the data stream couldn't do the image as fast, so it was kind of a half-step measure.
Right.
Do you know the first resolutions of TV screens were 320 by 200? Yeah, and so now we're talking about...
yeah, also known
right
as CGA.
Yes, CGA, very yeah, yeah. good.
Well, all right, so that's nice.
Are you bored now, Bonnie?
Yes, I'm bored. Is there anything else about the iPhone 6 that's a big darn deal?
The scaling, the camera system's good. You know, so all the marketing ploy. No one's... I mean, I don't know anybody that's actually played with it yet. They're getting, you know, a couple days from now, people will be playing with them.
Yeah.
We'll have them quickly, and I'll be telling you more
I'm
about them.
I'm not as much worried about fitting the 6 into a pocket as, say, the 5, just because it is so much thinner that it can go...
The blue
the
jeans...
Plus,
so we cut out a cardboard thing at work and with the 6 Plus, and I could get it in my pockets. So
about the 6 Plus.
The 6 Plus, yeah.
I think you start
about.
Making bigger pockets. I mean, as we start making phone
pants.
Calls on fabless.
Stock and cargo pants.
I'm
goes
obsessed
up.
With this fabless
The thing that
term.
I'm frustrating is, that keeps on bringing to my mind, is that female pockets are normally short, which is stupid and annoying. And so I think this is why you see more women using handbags than men, because the pockets are not adequate.
Well,
for
also, I can't fit my, you know, aromatic oils, my lip gloss, my nail file
in your pockets.
The necessities.
Yeah.
See, your pockets
are
unique. Cargo
my
pants,
lint roller.
Bonnie. The fanny pack. That's all I'm going to say.
No.
In any case, I think that using a large device is, I mean, I've been using a mini iPad mini, which is really quite big. I mean, for a phone, it's not a phone, of course. And so, it's a lovely device, but I wouldn't want that in my pocket.
Okay. I'm going to ask you guys about this term. I'm going to say it again. Phablet.
Yes.
It's a phone, but it's the size of a tablet, but is it smaller than an iPad mini?
So
I understand
the
screen
for like a Samsung phone a little while back that it
it's
was
like
a very large
size.
Names
for large size bottles.
Well, it's that it's so big that people were going like, how are you using that as a phone? But because its screen is now getting large enough where it's getting into tablet range for those interfaces.
You have to chicken neck to get from the receiver to the...
Well, to be honest, the only people that I know who have these really large phones are guys. Yeah. And I think it's because they have larger hands.
Is that why? Are they compensating for something?
Well, I don't know. But I mean, it's funny watching someone talk on the phone with them because they're
yeah.
huge.
So you're talking like the Galaxy Note 3, 4, 5. Those things are a 5.7-inch screen, so they're slightly bigger than the iPhone 6 Plus. But yeah, they're quite large. But I know a lot of people, if you've got a handbag and you're using a phone like that, they're awesome. I mean, you can see everything on them. You can, you know, scale. If you have vision problems, you can scale up the screen a lot and have a lot of real estate still.
And this is where various companies like Apple are coming up with, you know, the idea of like, hey, then you wear a watch and then you don't have to go shuffling your bag just to get some basic information.
Yeah. Or you wear Google Glass.
Right. And
was that birds tweeting in the distance I heard?
Yeah. All right. Really quickly, before we go to our first break, anything about this Apple Watch?
The watch. Okay. Yes.
What about the Apple Watch?
Well, it's amazing we finally have a watch that has, like, that's a digital watch on your wrist, because we've never had that before. Right, Miles?
Except for the...
But it's not about that. I've seen
except for the
screen.
Few years that Google has been doing it with Android.
There's, like, a bunch of apps or buttons on the... And only one of them, the size of one of the buttons, is the actual clock, and it's an analog clock.
So, no, when it's scaled up, the clock fits the whole screen. And the idea is when you interact with it, you start getting apps and things. Okay. And these apps are almost totally – the phone is connected to it. So you're going to install stuff and access stuff to the watch via your phone.
It's an accessory.
It's an accessory of an iPhone. Absolutely. And I think
that
we'll know –
You can't just get the watch without having the iPhone to go
You could,
with
but
it
wouldn't do anything.
Meine Güte.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably tell the time.
It's all a ploy.
That's the thing, though. When I got my first cell phone, I was going, awesome, I don't have to carry a watch anymore.
Like, right. And now
and
you're thinking
of
getting
I was one of those geeky people that had one of the calculator watches and the phone numbers and stuff like that.
The huge one.
And it's like, I've got all of that on my phone. I've got it all. I don't need this watch anymore.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you can get a watch.
We'll tell you what you need, Miles.
So the thing that the last thing that Apple talked about that's really quite important is going to change how we do commerce in the United States and the world.
And next time on the 7th Avenue Project, another fine show here at KUSP. Gang violence takes a terrible toll here on the Central Coast and elsewhere. But most of us know little about its sources, who's pulling the strings, why gangs just won't go away. Journalist Julia Reynolds has spent the last decade getting to know one notorious California gang, from the foot soldiers on the streets to the shot callers in prison. She talks to KUSP's Robert Polly about her new book, Blood in the Fields, 10 Years Inside California's Nuestra Familia Gang. And you'll hear about it on the next 7th Avenue Project tomorrow, that's Sunday, at noon, here on 88.9 KUSP. Right now you're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. I'm Bonnie, and with me in the ear room is Miles and Lyle, and we're talking about Apple, rah, rah, rah.
Sorry.
And what, there's some other thing other than these devices that I should be excited about?
So Miles mentioned that the iPhone 6 will be the largest selling iPhone ever, which means that more people will have iOS devices. It's growing. A lot more people have these devices.
It's like the skyscraper.
And the trickle-down continues.
When I got Google Glass, I switched over to a Nexus phone, an Android phone, Nexus 5, an absolutely fantastic phone because it paired with my Glass well, and I wanted to try that service because I'm a geek.
Yeah.
During that time, I actually had a phone with an NFC antenna in it.
And NFC means?
Stands
near field communication.
Okay.
It allows you to, if you've, we'll get into details about it maybe if you'd like.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happens, I go to Pete's Coffee regularly to get Pete's Coffee, and they actually have a Google Play device, but it's an NFC reader. And you set up your account with Google to be Google credit, I don't know what it's called.
Google Wallet.
Google Wallet. Yeah. Your phone actually has the antenna. You bring your device and you bring it in front and wave it in front of this little device next to the cash register, and that's how the payment's made. Mm-hmm. No touching, no writing, no communicate. That's just it.
More secure than using your credit card.
Absolutely more secure, because the company that I'm actually dealing with directly, the Pete's, doesn't know my credit card. In fact, doesn't actually even know my name, because they just get an automatic payment.
Oh.
And I control where that money comes from. So I set up my Google Wallet to actually go through my ATM for a while. So I used it for my bank.
So it wasn't a credit card. It's a secure way of sort of anonymously getting the dollars that they need without them retaining your personal information.
And Google's been doing this on Android phones for years. Uh-huh. But not a lot of retailers have had these devices. Pete's had them. I don't know if they're anywhere else, really.
Yeah.
In fact, at Pete's, because so few people use them, they're kind of behind the donuts of the day or whatever, right? They're kind of hidden. They're dusty. You got
to
kind of find it on the cash register. And then you wave it. And when I was first doing it, the people running the cash register would look at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is going to pay you. Like, what? And then it worked, right?
Abracadabra.
Yeah. It's like
there you
that.
Go, I'm Picasso.
Right. And to give some background as to why this type of thing is available, it's not just a, hey, look, we can do this geeky thing with our phone.
Yeah.
It's back in the day, you had rampant credit card fraud.
Yes.
Back in the day?
What, we're having it now?
No, I mean, it was crazy in Europe.
Yeah.
A while back. And it was so much worse than in the U.S. And they really just jumped on it and went like, this is out of control. We can't function like this as a functioning economy.
And they required the chip.
Yeah, and so they have a a chip and card, mm-hmm. which I had actually never seen until I went to England a little while back, where I had my credit card and suddenly it was like, oh,
I can't do this.
You just hold your card up next to the point of sale machine and boop, you're done.
Okay.
It isn't a swipe.
Now, is that NFC as well?
I believe so.
Okay. So the thing that's interesting about our current credit cards, that little magnetic strip, that has all the data about your credit card and your name and your address on it.
Yeah.
It's just embedded on the card. Sometimes it's not the address, but most of the time it is. So this, all this information is on this strip. And so those are easy to program. I mean, you can buy a $4 thing that allows you to reprogram it anytime you want. So you can turn any credit card into any other card. It's just a readable, writable thing. And there's no secret on it because when the register reads it, it gets all that information.
Yeah.
That's kind of a problem because you don't really want that credit card number to go to the people that you're dealing with. You want the transaction to go to them.
Well, and isn't that what's been happening like at Home Depot and Target?
Yes.
Yeah, basically. Partially
that's exactly
the problem,
what they did. Yeah,
right,
skimmer.
The information becomes available.
Yeah, so this chip thing, what this chip does is it does a two-way communication where the cash register says, hey, I'm interested, gives some information back and some secret goes back. Mm-hmm. There's a handshake going on where the register doesn't know all the data in the card. The card actually is smart, and that allows you to do a totally different level of security. So we won't get into the details of that. But what happened with Apple's announcement is the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, and maybe they'll even put it in the 5, I don't know, probably not, will have NFC. We'll have this capability.
Yeah. Okay, I remember.
Are they still making 5s? Isn't the whole thing with making a 6 is they're no longer making the 5s?
They normally keep making
the 5Cs. The 5, and the 5Cs are like 99 cents or something like that to get with a contract. But the 5S, you can do the NFC as long as you buy the watch.
I see. So one of the things they're also doing is they've made this deal with the credit card companies where they're going to get that special rate of, yes, proof of high identity. So there's different rates on credit cards. And if you do less security on the credit card, then the credit card company takes more of a percentage. If you do more security, if you force different things, you get a cheaper rate. Mm-hmm. So this is all about, you know, whether they ask for the ID and stuff. That's part of the rules that you get the cheaper rate on. So the thing that Apple was able to do is negotiate with these major card systems, right? Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. They said when the person has their phone and it's got the thumbprint thing on it, right, that the new phones have, we will treat that as a perfect identity match, the cheapest rate you could possibly get. Okay. So all of a sudden, using this phone, that affects the retailer, right? The retailer will not get as much of a percentage loss on the credit card purchase.
Yeah.
That's really beneficial to them.
So it's good for retailers.
Yeah.
It's good for credit card companies because they don't have to worry so much about
it. Credit card companies are just masters of the universe anyway. Okay. So it doesn't, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds good.
And is it good for – does any of that savings trickle down to
– I wouldn't say the savings, but the security perspective, it's a little safer. I mean, unless people cut your fingers off, it's pretty good for you.
Yeah, things like if you were using your phone to pay for stuff at Target or Home Depot –
you had to trust their system.
This type of thing couldn't happen. Like they can't reuse that code that your card gave again.
Yeah.
It's a one-time pad. So,
okay.
So we're going to see relatively quickly everybody will have these NFCs. Everybody will be paying with their phones. And then Android –
and for that matter, we need to start having chip and card. We need to start having the credit cards that have the chip
or,
in there
or
well.
You know, maybe just chip and card will just go away. We just won't have credit cards
anymore.
We'll just switch straight to the
phone, right? Well, that means everyone has to have a smartphone.
That's what I mean. Like having the chip and card just has
– Yeah, that, as the backup.
That should always be – that available.
I'm looking forward to not carrying credit cards. Like that's I don't want a wallet.
Yeah,
I already have a phone.
But finishing that thought of like in Europe, they had this whole big problem. They went to chip and card, and suddenly their fraud just basically disappeared overnight. Or I mean, to a large extent. And suddenly the U.S., it was like, oh, we had some, but it wasn't enough that people wanted to pay to get it fixed.
To be clear, one of the patterns that they did
so
in the chip and card in Europe.
So we should thank the overlords who are taking information at Home Depot and Target because they're helping advance the technology of security.
So the chip and card in the U.K. and Europe is it requires a PIN. So you flag your card over the system, and then you have to enter in a 4-digit PIN. So there's a second-level thing. The card, I think, actually verifies that, but maybe not. Maybe it's actually the bank that does that. But it's very much like our ATM process here in the States.
Right.
All right.
Okay. So anything else to say about Home Depot?
Well, yeah. I mean, we could definitely talk about that. We talked in the January 18th show, Ben mentioned the story about Target had 40 million users' credit card information.
That was quite a bit of news.
That was January, right?
Yeah.
And what was basically happening is a virus was installed on the Target point of sale systems and collected data for months and months and months.
Well, and we'd like to think that because it happened in such a public way that all other companies were like, rut-row, we better shore up our security. But then here comes along Home Depot, and clearly they were worried about other things.
And I wouldn't. It really needed someone that had some clout. And I love the fact that Google had
what
NFC technology
that needed clout?
To push this technology forward.
Okay.
I love the fact that Google had this technology in the past, but there is also that trend of Apple users tend to be more free with their money than Android users, I guess.
It and spend it at Apple?
Well,
to have an Apple device, you have to be willing to let go of a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, the App Store versus the Android Store, that type of thing. And so when Apple then says, we have this very popular phone, let's team up with MasterCard and all those other ones and all these point-of-sale organizations and say, hey, we're going to do this. Folks are like, oh, people with iPhones? That's a good demographic. Let's. So I do hope that this really does push things forward that way.
Well, there's that. But I think the assumption was like, hey, Target, get your own security act together. Hey, Home Depot and other stores where lots of credit card information is passed around, get your own security act.
The thing that's
together.
Amazing is that, you know, the Target stuff breaks in January.
Yeah.
And now, what is it, September?
Yeah.
Home Depot gets shown. It's and I don't want to say it's exactly the same thing, but it is.
It is.
it was a very similar thing.
The software is just modified slightly, right? It's just another version.
It's another version and, of the same. It's the same method.
Yeah.
Right. Basically, and if you haven't gotten the message yet, if you have shopped at Home Depot in the last few years, because this has been going on for some time.
It's collected over time, right?
You need to check your bank records and possibly look at getting a new credit card.
Yeah.
Like it is non-trivial.
So what's been happening is if you shop there and you scanned, there's a virus in the machine that says, oh, cool, credit card. Oh, your zip code, if that was being asked for. Like all the data about you, your name, everything. Oh, let's just collect that. And then later on, let's go buy something somewhere with that information. And it's not...
Send it overseas to Eastern Europe or something.
Yeah, it's not necessarily an identity theft thing where a new account's being created for you. It's actually another charge on your card. And it looks like this is happening a lot. Like hundreds of millions of dollars are slowly being pulled out of people's credit cards.
And does it look like if I were to look at my credit card statement, I'd be like, oh, I guess I went to Home Depot again.
There is this trick that credit card companies have been doing for a while. It wouldn't be at Home Depot necessarily. It would be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. There's a fraud system in place in credit card companies that try to detect a pattern that matches yours, and they'll cancel those patterns. So if you've ever gotten a message when you're traveling, this almost always happens. Are you sure you want to buy gas in Nebraska? You're like, yeah, I'm in Nebraska. That's why I'm trying to get gas, right? And they're trying to stop you because they think it might be fraudulent. Right. That's the reason is that it's remote access. So,
and if you have NFC, then you don't have to get those calls,
right? So this pattern of having the phone have it NFC or NFC in chip, this kind of thing won't occur because the credit card will never actually be at the hardware store, or whatever, to actually be taken. Right. Instead, it'll be a one-time handshake thing that cannot be reused, and it's a lot safer, a lot more secure.
Right. Now,
thank you, Google, for pioneering this. Thanks, Apple, for making it happen.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. Those are two separate companies, right? I get them confused sometimes. Yeah. All right, and so really quickly, there was also a Gmail scare, passwords made available. What's the deal with that?
That one is there wasn't a compromise of Apple –
I get confused.
He works for Google, and he can't get their names right.
Right.
See how confusing it is.
There was not a compromise of Google's mail servers.
Okay.
There was not. Like, they never got in. What was happening was there was a separate phishing scam that had been going around the net that had been collecting people's addresses, something. So people putting up web pages that look like Google's login page, for example, and then people typing in their credentials, and then they have the...
It's actually a very common thing. That's why we say don't click on links on emails, because you could get some email from your bank. Let's say your bank's Wells Fargo. It says, click on this. You click on it. It looks exactly like a Wells Fargo site, but instead it's Wells Fargo to know. And they have a secure identity, and it looks all right. And as you enter their information, they now have your bank information. So that is what was happening for Google for a long time. People made these sites, collected this data, and that's the thing that
came around.
Well, it
happens for any site that has any type of size. I'm sure it happens to some extent with Apple's stuff, and it happens with Hotmail.
There was a class at UCSC when I was there where the instructor asked people to duplicate bank websites and put them up like as part of the class. It didn't go over well in the security branch of the university, but I thought it was fantastic teaching how easy it is to do this. So what you're saying is that somebody had done this, and then those email addresses and passwords just got out recently.
They were discovered and then disseminated, saying like, "Yeah, this is what we found."
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And because they've been around for a while.
But so if you updated your password because of the last scare, then you're pretty good?
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. And in general, like, just don't put your username and password in. If you remember, this is also stretching it, but if you remember a time where you put in your username and password and then it said, oh, I got that wrong, and then you tried again and you got in, probably was the phishing scheme where, like, they collected it once, then they gave you a generic error message, send you to the real login screen, and then you typed it in and it worked.
They actually captured it in the middle there.
Right, but yeah. That comes down to, if anyone's ever messed up putting in their username and password.
Also, you don't have to do that. They could redirect right away. The point about all this is when we on GeekSpeak say, hey, you guys, you really should have unique passwords for every site. Also, yeah. Make sure they're strong and long, yeah. And then change them every once in a while. This is the reason.
And yeah. Even more important, with Google logins, you have the option of two-factor authentication.
I just did that.
You
I
did?
I just did that this week. That.
Okay, so when you did your two-factor authentication, yeah. Bonnie, yeah. Did you print out some codes for yourself in case you have a problem later?
No,
okay.
No.
You need to do that.
Really?
Yeah. So one of the issues.
So I screwed up already.
No, no. Well,
they
just,
gave me some
tricky.
Sort of unique 16 character thing that I went, okay, and I typed it in. And
okay,
like,
that's
good,
probably a one time password that you're using for
yeah.
Some service. Yeah, those are great. You can recreate those anytime. If you do two factor authentication, which is slightly different,
oh.
Every time you log in, you have to get
you
some.
You log
other,
into a different device.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you log into one device on your computer, laptop. If
yeah.
You wanted to also do your desktop at home,
yeah.
You'd actually have to get. Some secondary way of saying that you are you.
Right.
Sometimes this is a message gets sent to your text, your phone.
That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the question happens. Here's the question. Let's say you drop your phone in the toilet.
Yeah.
And you want to log in to some onto your Google account.
Yeah.
You no longer have the phone.
Right.
How do you do that? And that's why you need a backup system. Then normally you can print out these like one-time use codes.
I thought I could go to the website. And go, I dropped my phone in the toilet.
Assuming that your laptop still is authenticated for your account, you're okay. But let's say you lose your laptop and your phone, you go to My Computer, there's no way for you to get into your Google account. And that's why two-factor authentication is slightly risky. Because you don't want to have a situation where you call them and go, no, but it's really me, because somebody else might do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So two-factor authentication has a little bit of risk, but it's highly recommended that you invest your time in it if you care about your identity and your information. And yeah,
I do such a bad job at passwords and switching them up and making them unique for every site that I thought I better do something.
Yeah,
at least.
That's a good thing to
something
do.
Something
to really
do.
A good thing to do. I mean, I would say that if you have a Google account, you do two-factor authentication on it, you manage that well.
Yeah.
You could go ahead and go into your Google account, open up a document in there, and put all your passwords in there.
Yeah.
That would be better than what most people are doing.
Okay. Okay. So. Well, listen, before we go to our next break,
yeah.
there seems to be a relationship between the VFN that you're talking about and the teeny tiny radios that researchers are making.
Oh, yeah, radios.
And you know something about that, Lyle.
Sure.
Although, I want to do a quick addition, which is Greg was helping us out saying that Canada also has the chip-on-card.
That's true.
Awesome,
so,
yeah.
Once
yeah,
again,
it's all over the place,
win.
Basically, right? It's
yeah,
probably
except,
in Latin
yeah.
America as well, too, but.
Well, if you have developing countries,
maybe.
They don't have the infrastructure for it. But with regard to
sometimes
developed
they
countries,
surpass us for like great cell phone or something.
Right. Brazil
like
probably
that.
Has it, I'm assuming. I mean,
yeah. But above like the Europe and the North
yeah.
America, yeah, we're the odd
derp,
balls.
Derp.
Okay.
Just like with the metric system.
So teeny tiny radios. And we're talking super dinky small. Like you could fit several of them on a penny.
It's true.
And we'll have a picture of it up at geekspeak.org after the show. But why? Why would you have such a teeny tiny radio?
So we've been able to do really tiny radios for a long time. In fact, the NFC chips we were talking about, that's a small radio.
Essentially,
and,
it's
and
a
the
small
thing
radio.
That's interesting is there's
and
no
you need a retina screen to see them.
Yeah, they're really, really small.
The small
radio, the reason why they're kind of interesting is the NFC technology, for
mm-hmm.
example,
mm-hmm.
is that there's no power inside that antenna. It's a reflective powered source. So you give it a carrier wave, like KOSP's 88.9 is a carrier wave.
Mm-hmm.
And that carrier wave actually produces enough electricity to then have an intelligent response. That's how these things work.
Mm-hmm.
So they can get really, really small on a microscale. The thing that's interesting about the Stanford radio that they have a great picture of on top of a penny is that they're really like, to mass produce these is like 2 cents a piece. And they don't need a battery. So they last forever.
Oh, okay.
And they're self-identifying and have some intelligence to them, right? So
yeah.
you can pretty cheaply just put them in everything you own, right? So now your toaster can know that what sweater you're wearing. You know, like that could be something
well,
that happens.
Well, your toaster doesn't care if you're wearing a certain sweater.
Mm-hmm.
But they might care it's you, so they know how to make your toast.
Yes, right, exactly. Well, if it's you, yeah, exactly.
Right, like I like mine medium dark. Oh, it's Bonnie. I better make the medium dark toast.
Right, because it'd be so hard to actually push the second button.
I don't
want
to have to turn a knob.
Turning a knob. Oh,
to ML.
Humanity. But, you know, we joke about these things, but as you become, as you get digitally enhanced, I mean, right now we all carry a phone. It identifies us. Miles and I have phones that actually have a thumbprint to unlock them, so that really identifies us. It's easier and easier to get the world around you to know who you are, which is creepy, also useful.
Yeah.
So these radios would allow that network, that home network to actually be, or that personal network to be enlarged.
For what it's worth, I don't have the thumbprint scanner.
You don't?
I have the original iPhone 5.
Actually, it's Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean in the air room with Lyles and Miles. Lyles and Miles.
How lyrical of you.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oklahoma, where your private life is laid out on the plain.
In Oklahoma, the ACLU is requesting detailed information on intelligence network a site known as, and this is a great name, Black Asphalt.
Dun, dun, dun.
So,
yeah, what's this about?
Yeah, what's
and,
really
and
unfortunate.
What other color is asphalt?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it kind of gets grayish,
it's
too.
It's like an Oxford gray.
Oh, it's so bad. So what's been happening is in Oklahoma, there's this wonderful program by the police department to just track everybody. Let's just track everybody. And let's have a website called Black Asphalt where you can go on and find out all the details. Let's figure out, I don't know, social security number, where people live, what cars they drive, where they've been, you know, everything possible.
Do they just not have any good contacts at the NSA?
Well, that's the thing is that the NSA has been using this system when they go to Oklahoma. That's how useful it is for the police force.
All right.
So, yeah, the criminals... the idea is that they'll find criminals. But the problem is they're not tracking criminals. They're tracking everybody, which is not really the right way to go about it.
Well, first of all, that seems like a lot of information to wade through to get to the stuff you really want.
It's a lot. It's a lot. The
well,
other thing,
it
though...
Also gets in, yeah, that's the surveillance
How inconvenient
state.
For them.
Getting getting through all the information isn't the hard part. It is that whole surveillance state of what do you have to hide?
So the other thing that's been going on is this has been a social network for the police force in Oklahoma.
What?
And what they do is when they get a good bust, like, you know, drugs or whatever, they take photographs of it, then they post it up on the site so they can kind of like one-up each other and brag about what they've done. So the police force, to get this idea, they're taking like selfies of crime scenes that they've dealt with.
Right back to Guantanamo.
And tracking everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? So the idea is that the competition, of course, would suggest that they're motivated by the system to be more diligent and compete with each other, which is not really what you want a police force doing. You don't want a police force...
Yeah, diligent to do what?
To do what? Right, to get good
Keep
shots
me safe?
To put up on the website. That's the problem. It's not about justice.
Yeah.
It's about the, you know, money and drugs that they capture.
Yeah.
So... ACLU has filed a lawsuit. There's a really great story from the Washington Post that really covers this well. Okay. But it's just another example of probably a pretty smart idea by somebody at one point, just done without thinking about the – without really caring about the – yeah, well, not caring about the individual's privacy. I mean, it's not cool. So – this means that anybody that's passed through Oklahoma gets a record basically in this system, right?
Ew.
And they start getting added to and tracked as they find out more
Is
information.
Is tourism down in Oklahoma?
Well, it will be now,
Jeez.
I hope.
I was actually thinking there's all this talk about like, yes, let's increase the technology use of police departments. And yet there is a huge pushback on police departments wearing wearable cameras.
Mm-hmm. I know.
They're
if you
always
wanna,
on
yeah.
to show their interactions with the public.
I firmly believe that police should have, when they're on duty, they should have cameras recording the whole time.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Then you can
And name
get,
badges.
Yeah. And name badges.
She said archly. Sometimes they take them off when they know they're going into a sketchy situation.
Yeah. And because this is Geek Speak, I'm going to do a quote by William Adama from Battlestar Galactica.
Geek.
When there's a reason you separate military and the police. One fights the enemies of the state, the other serves and protects the people. When the military becomes both, then the enemies of the state tend to become the people.
Adama, I love you.
They just slipped it in there, didn't they?
I totally let you.
It's such a great show.
Yeah, anyway.
What other program would you have that? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So what's happened is the ACLU filed a request for the information as a public record request information. They haven't done it they haven't had no response and no response to this. So that's why they're filing the lawsuit. So
right, because they tried to just communicate and
we want to see what's inside the system and how you're using it, and it's a public system and therefore give it to
no. No. Okay, we'll make you.
All right. So that's
well. I hope that works out because that's everything's creeping me out, you guys. literally everything has a creep factor to it. There's probably something creepy to the Western Digital making big old hard drives.
Well, I don't know if it's creepy, but you can hold a whole lot of information with them.
How much?
Well, Seagate already in August announced a 8-terabyte drive.
Okay, so how much information? How many is the terabytes? Terabytes?
Yeah. Well, it's more than your mind can consume.
I'm remembering in the late 90s when I was getting a 8-gigabyte drive and thinking how awesome that was. So
I've got a little 8-gigabyte little stick.
So fast forward 15 years and hard drive space has increased now by a factor of 1,000.
Gee, gosh. How much do they cost? Do they cost 1,000 times more?
Well, they usually cost as much as the price point of the newest, best hard drives, which are usually like, you know, $300 to $400.
Okay.
I don't know for these particular ones, especially because they just announced that they have they're getting ready to release their 10-terabyte hard drive.
Is that because people are going to run out of space on their 8-terabyte drives?
Well, what you couldn't do in the past was record straight video and just keep recording video for long periods of time.
Oh.
You had this is also comes to the case with personal video recorders where you're recording shows and they get recorded to hard drives. And the bigger your hard drive, the less you have to delete stuff to make room for new stuff.
Oh, okay. So it allows you to just be disorganized.
Right. Of course, to get this, well, that's what software is for.
Yeah.
The thing about these drives, in order to get them so they can have that much density, is you can't have them just running in air anymore. Because before, they just tried to keep the dust out, but they were working in our normal nitrogen, you know, oxygen environment. And you know, oxygen, I guess it's, what is it, 10% oxygen, somewhere thereabouts?
Get it right.
I don't know.
I can't hear the rest of the story until we get the ratio right.
Somewhere between 10 and 20. Nitrogen, somewhere around 80.
Okay.
Because oxygen, if you have that going on, you know, an iron-based device.
Oh, oxidizing.
Yeah. So it starts to cause rust, and the rust can be useful, but oxidation in general isn't good for keeping things the way they are.
But of course, the other reason to fill the chamber with something like helium is that the density is less, and therefore you have...
spin faster.
Yeah, you can spin faster. It's pretty
so
awesome.
So that's why they don't use argon, I suppose.
And spin faster and with lower noise.
Yes.
Because you don't, yeah.
The thing that upsets me about these is that I think everybody I know has had lost a hard drive, right?
Yeah.
So I personally, especially at this point, would rather have a really stable system that always, my data was safe all the time.
Sure.
Rather than have more and more data that might crash at any moment. And that's the thing, is that they're just pushing the envelope up more and more and more. So now we can get 10 terabytes of data that will last a month and a half on average.
Sacrificing stability for
absolutely
stuff.
They are, because they're pushing the envelope.
Hard drives have always had their flaky aspects to them. So I don't know that that has changed so much, but the amount of data... Whereas in the past you may have split things up into multiple hard drives, now you have this incentive to consolidate on a single hard drive.
Which is all your eggs in one basket. That
right.
sounds scary.
And that's where it becomes really useful to have a RAID system, a redundant array of independent disks, where you have two 10-terabyte
and
hard drives.
And hope only one of them dies.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Keep buying more. No, I see how it is.
Yeah, in fact, RAID 6 is probably the new goodness, because you probably will lose more than one drive, and therefore you need a duplication system that accounts for a potential loss of at least two.
And so that's an N plus two?
Yeah, RAID 6 is, I believe. Yeah. Two parity drives.
Why isn't it like six spinning disks? I'm thinking of the Chinese jugglers. Okay.
RAID is a description of a type of system. And so RAID 0, 1, 2, so they all have different meanings.
Oh.
A RAID 5 is you can lose any one drive and you're totally fine. You can have 10 drives. If you lose one of them, all your data is totally safe.
Okay.
But during the time of that loss, you're really restricted, because something could happen to another drive and then you lose it. RAID 6 adds two of those drives. Here's two drives of parity, which means that you can lose any two drives at any time any two drives, your data is still good. Any one drive, you can totally still do stuff, and you can build a second. So it's just a more robust system. So if you do this kind of thing, you'd want like four drives in a RAID 6 configuration, which would give you 20 terabytes of data.
But there's a cheaper way, which is if you're not you can do raid one, which is both drives have all the information, and one of them dies, you just use the other one.
Can't we just have a magical cloud that just takes care of all our data for us? That's why it's so compelling, right?
That's why everyone's working on it, right?
Like, as I'm talking about these raids,
that fails too, though.
As I'm talking about these raids and duplicate levels, I'm thinking, I don't care about this. I don't want to. I don't want to deal with this problem ever again.
No. You don't ever lose data in the cloud. Just ask Jennifer Lawrence.
Everybody gets it.
Yeah, no, everyone found it. Yeah. It was available to everybody. Yeah.
Or Linus Torvalds, where he says, I don't do backups. You know, real programmers just upload their stuff to the FTP and wait for everyone else to download it.
Hey, as we close out the show here, we've got a couple more stories to cover, but I wanted to let you know about a couple web extras that'll be up at the website. One is just a nice survey of a bunch of women who contributed significantly to the history of tech and the internet and computers. It's really nice, put together at mike.com, so you'll see that.
It's wonderful. It's like Jenny Jenkins Bartik and Ada Lovelace, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, all these famous early computer engineers, mm-hmm. female computer engineers, mm-hmm. and wonderful collections of photos and the systems they worked on, little stories about them.
Really, yeah. Grace Hopper.
And then our honorary geek, Greg, wanted to show us the stadium full of robot baseball fans in, was it South Korea?
Oh, good. Robot baseball fans.
Yeah, I'd heard about this. I think we didn't tell me. It would be fun to see it.
Yeah, definitely.
So that'll be up at
geekspeak.org.
Geekspeak.org. But also, there's more things going on. What's happening with Heartbleed? What?
Heartbleed was the vulnerability in servers where Yes, it would read the memory, and if you read a small chunk of memory often enough, passwords start going into that window that you're looking into.
It was the big thing recently. I don't know when we talked about it, but you had to change your password because lots of sites were...
Which is probably why your Gmail breach is fine, because you've already changed your password.
Yeah. So on the bad side, there are still servers that have the Heartbleed vulnerability and people haven't patched
them. They haven't updated their OpenSSH.
On the bright side, when researchers have been looking to see if there were any exploits of it, looking at older network traffic and samples of that and seeing if this was going on for some time before we knew about it.
Yeah.
And it looks like it wasn't.
So no one...
When it was discovered... That was around the time that people started trying to exploit it.
So on the flip the coin of whether bad guys or good guys see it first, we won this time.
The good guys saw it first. So far as we know.
Well, we saw it at the same time.
Yeah.
Around the same
time. Same time.
So that's nice, because that was part of the creep out factor with the Heartbleed thing is
how long have
people been...
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
Right, because it had been a bug that had been in there for a while.
Oh. Yeah. And it's interesting because once you can't trust that type of system, mm-hmm. the domino effect of what you can't trust just gets really big. Like all of a sudden there was a question of, wait a second, I got my certificate from a website that might have had the vulnerability. So therefore, even though I never used the certificate, that certificate might be bad. Like this chain reaction.
Yeah, and it's a hop, skip, and a jump to, black helicopter.
World domination.
Yeah. Okay, so lately Comcast has been... using JavaScript injection.
Oh yeah, this is
to do
a great
ads.
One story.
And that's exciting, right? Because JavaScript, we like JavaScript.
I do.
Isn't that exciting? But there's some sort of a cost to internet health as a whole.
Yeah. So. Comcast, of course, has this giant Wi-Fi network that they offer for free for their customers. So you can go to different stores, and you'll see Xfinity.
And
the
their
Wi-Fi
customers system. Offer for free. For
is that Comcast? Xfinity is Comcast.
Yeah. If you see an Xfinity Wi-Fi access point, that's going to go through Comcast.
Oh.
And they kind of thought lots of people were using this.
Yeah.
So they wanted to let you know.
By putting ads in.
That say, hey, we're Comcast? Or
so what they would do is, while the web page was coming through, they'd inject a little script into the payload as it comes down so that they can show an ad.
They had really fast typists.
Okay.
Like they were like.
Yeah.
So basically, if you
went
to Geek Speak website.
Which technically is a violation of copyright law.
Is it? Oh, because you're changing the content of the page you're looking at.
They're making a derivative work without permission. It's awesome. I kind of want them
but
to
But it
get
also
sued
means
for that.
There are a huge number of sites that aren't using HTTPS because HTTPS would prevent this type of thing.
Right. So HTTPS, the thing you always want to have,
super
the lock.
Secure
When you do that, the pipe between you and the place you're going is not viewable. Yeah. But when it's not that way, it's totally viewable. And your ISP, Comcast in this case, can just look at it, do anything they want, modify it on the fly, and that's what they were doing. Okay. The idea behind it was, we should let people know they're currently using Comcast. And actually, that's the only thing they were injecting is, you're using Comcast. kind of ad.
Okay.
Which is great. Like,
for now.
We're doing something kind of illegal and creepy, and it's Comcast, and they're labeling your page.
They're labeling themselves as icky.
Yeah, this is also the same tactic people use to break into servers and sites and steal information. So,
and other than just being
practical jokes, when someone was stealing your Wi-Fi, that you could set up your router so that if a certain MAC address, like the one from your neighbor, comes through, that you could rewrite all image queries so the images show up upside down, or
all the pictures are changed to their dog going to the bathroom on your lawn.
If you are on an unsecure channel using HTTP and going through a network that someone else controls,
they control the data.
They can do anything.
Okay, so what's the takeaway?
Takeaway is use an SSL certificate no matter what. And Comcast, you're a jerk.
Yeah, basically.
I guess. I don't know. Is that good?
Or use a VPN.
Use
which
a
you should
network.
Do if you're on a coffee, you know.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's enough.
Nothing
that's enough show.
All right.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. So use our stuff any way you like. Just tell them Geek say hi. This is public radio for the Central Coast. 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of GeekSpeak, please visit GeekSpeak.org. Thanks for being here, by the way. This was the September 13th episode of GeekSpeak. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch for Miles Elam and Lyle Troxell. Thank you so much.